was the world's strangest accident while testing a new rocket ship. Our heroes were bombarded by mysterious cosmic rays from outer space. Though they crash-landed safely, the strange and powerful rays had changed each one of them, transforming their leader, Reed Richards, into the plastic-skinned Mr. Fantastic.
Everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, doing something that we never do, but we're doing it anyway, doing something thematic and topical. We're doing an episode of the Fantastic Four cartoon, because there's a movie called Fantastic Four based on these characters, and it's very popular out in theaters right now. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am merely Ray Stakanis.
You say that we don't do this sort of thing.
Not typically.
This is exactly what we always do, which is something topical 2 weeks too late.
Yes, okay.
Maybe you know, 3 weeks. I don't even know when this is coming.
I think this is going to come out a week after this will come out in Fantastic Four's third week. So yes, you are correct.
Cool. Right on schedule.
Right on schedule. Well, we had this planned for before. And maybe we did. I don't even know if we did.
No, that afternoon, Gino's like, hey, we should do something Fantastic Four. I was like, what?
And that's then, a good point, yeah.
Med passed.
So planned ahead of time. The point I'm trying to make here is, Chen, a lot of people joined us for our G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra live-action movie watch with the patrons. We were joined by more people than probably we deserve in the Patreon feed. And Robert Clark Chan couldn't be there because of severe food poisoning illness. Chan, tell the people at home, are you okay?
Yeah.
What happened?
I got food poisoning.
That is riveting.
You're the one that brought it up.
Well, what, I thought you'd have had, like, some kind of a story. We are on a podcast. I was asking open-ended questions, and you answered, yeah.
Yeah.
We're on a podcast, man. Make something up.
I was open-ended on both sides. That's how food poisoning works. It's not different for anybody. It fucking sucks. And here we are. Jesus Christ. Hey, how's that cancer treating you? You like the cancer? Tell us some stories about your fucking...
You know, I would argue cancer...
has a tumor in it.
Woo! Cancer, slightly more serious than having it come out both ends. Perhaps so there's something fun happening there for the rest of us to enjoy.
You want shit jokes?
Kinda. Now I want poop and barf jokes.
Make your own. Can we introduce the guest now? He's been sitting for quite some time while you're like, hey, tell me more about the things that come out of your butt. Ooh, highbrow.
Oh, we're not a highbrow show. Get out of here. Well, listen, we have a special guest because TV's Gina Ippolito dipped. Why is Gina not with us today?
I lost track because both of you started throwing things at I'm going out of state. Oh, I have things to do. I have relationships and what have you. Meanwhile, I'm trying to juggle a child of my own, like literally physically in my lap, trying to make this thing happen while we're waiting for you. So I don't know, man.
Our special guest today is an artist, comedian, just all general Hollywood fellow. Please welcome to the show the man who drew our current logo for Knowing is Half the Podcast Season 9, Mr. Sam Weller, is back once more. Sam, how you doing?
I am feeling good tonight to be with you both, Ray and RCC. Honestly, it was a real treat to do the art for the pod, and I hope that the fan base has enjoyed y'all's selection of the tribute. I don't know if you talked a little bit about it or why that picture over others, but you know, sort of the choices made in it was a lot of fun to work out with you guys. So thanks for having me on the show.
I think we have talked about the new logo at all, if I can be honest with you. That's kind of embarrassing, Chan.
That's neither here nor there. Sam, tell us about a time you got food poisoning. Explain how you felt.
Okay, so there was this one time in high school where we went out because my brother had gotten engaged. We were in Nebraska. We went to a takeout pulled pork restaurant. Needless to say, my father and I ended up holding on to one another as we were bent over the ivory altar. And it was honestly a moment where, like, I felt really close to my...
It was like a two boys, one bowl situation. Both of y'all...
Yeah, and my dad's like a foot and a half taller than me. So it was this sort of odd, sort of like flying buttress situation, you know, where the lower thing is. That, and so I was in a bad position, right?
That's so wild, because Sam, you're famously about 6'7", so...
That's right, brother. Right, we got to keep kayfabe.
So yeah. Tell us what it's like to work with Knowing is Half the Podcast, to create such great art. For those who don't know, our art is inspired by a G.I. Joe comic book cover, because we're going hard with the G.I. Joe thematics, because this is, we're doing the movie, we're doing Resolute, you know, we're doing all kinds of good stuff like that. Talk us through your process as an artist.
Sure. Well, you know, first I was taking my cues from you guys off of the particular issue, the particular cover artist. I forget the name of at the moment, but I you know, utilized their layout extensively to try and echo it as close as I could. I think the most fun thing about really trying to bring it together, it was trying to do something that would like read really clearly, mm-hmm. because those old like graphic covers always have such great color structure. So this was something that really challenged me to do something similar, do something that was striking and like was emulating the original without just being a full, just trace over job. And part of that too was like switching the different roles, you know, of where Baroness is, you know, in the photo, right. Switching out the gun that she's shooting. And then like wanting to give Chan, who in this, you know, moment is like the quick kick stand in, but like, you know, in the original cover, Quick Kick has this pretty Shakespearean, you know, pieta like look where it's like it's falling back into Snow Job, right? Is that
yeah? That's Snow Job. Yep.
Yeah, it's falling back into Snow Job, but Snow Job's giving him like cover fire. But I kind of wanted to do something more badass because it's Chan, so he's like pulling a grenade out with his teeth, like. All right, you got me, but I'm going to give you my best shot. You know, we're going for broke. And I just felt like that was the attitude of the podcast. Like, y'all under fire, but like, you know, giving each other cover fire. And that seemed to be dramatic. It was a cool, dramatic image to render.
I feel like there are few episodes of television that we've watched that would... more accurately represent us under fire than this one here that we watched. I feel,
oh God,
not like your version of me. I feel like the Mike Zeck version of Quick Kick, who looks like, yeah, he's having a heart attack or possibly lost the love of his life, or maybe he's just like really into rubbing his nipples, or maybe all three at the same time.
That's true.
While being shot at.
I honestly did want to take Chan's probably nipple preferences, you know, in mind. I wanted to make sure that they were robust. Yeah.
One of the things.
Accuracy.
Well, Sam, thank you for being a part of the show. I mean, I love hearing about us. So the point I'm trying to make here is Fantastic Four. Did we all see the movie? Let's start there. No spoilers to the people at home. But obviously, we're all on the cutting edge. I obviously went the opening weekend, and neither of you two has seen the movie.
No,
where it's a cultural touchstone.
Is it? Is it? If you went out and asked 10 people on the street if Fantastic Four, how many of them would you say have seen it?
Probably two. At least six.
One, maybe.
What? Not the if people I would ask.
Yeah, if you're out in front of the freaking El Cap, sure.
I like to stand outside of screenings of Fantastic Four and ask that question. And
still
I get a very large number of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not great.
It's true. It's a great movie.
I'm sorry.
Everybody.
I'm sorry that I'm participating in group night at Geeky Tees.
I just went to Geeky Tees for the first time a week ago. I stopped by. It's on my ride home from downtown at the new office. And I really liked Geeky Tees. They had a wonderful, gigantic Final Girl section. Quite honestly, larger than I was expecting anyone to ever have anywhere. And so those of you who don't play it should play Final Girl. That's my point. Go to Geeky Tees in Burbank.
What? You're in a... Who would have thunk?
Who knew? Anyway, what is your history with the Fantastic Four?
So my history with the Fantastic Four was ingrained probably because of Alex... Why do I want to say Alex Toth when I mean the artist for Kingdom Come?
Alex Ross.
Alex Ross, yeah. So when he did Marvels, I feel like that was, I don't want to say that was my first exposure to the Fantastic Four, but it was one that really stuck out to me when I was like coming out of grade school into high school, buying comics for the first time, exploring things even beyond what I'd read about in Wizard magazine, and then discovering, you know, Alex Ross when he did Marvels, and then, you know, seeing Kingdom Come and buying those issues, but seeing his rendition of Galactus and the first encounter with Galactus was super memorable. And it really implanted in my mind that for a certain generation of comic fan, that's like a bedrock memory. But for me, I was born in 86. The Fantastic Four were just sort of like legacy characters that are super important in Marvel. And they are like really important with like crossovers. But I would be reading like, you know, Jim Krueger's like, you know, Earth X or whatever, and be like, oh, this is a cool version of what if Reed Richards turned into Doctor Doom, you know, or whatever. But I wasn't overly familiar with their stuff sentimentally. Probably my most sentimental memory of the Fantastic Four was having Reed Richards in one of the Marvel games where he had the spinning arms and he could kill a lot of Doom bots. So
it's pretty good.
I think Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 or something, Reed Richards was like my goat. I loved using the springy splash kick. So that got a lot of points with me.
I could dig it. Chan, you've heard of this property before?
I was an X-Men guy. You're talking about like legacy characters. Like at the time, Avengers were legacy characters. Like,
true.
I didn't know anybody who read the Avengers or Fantastic Four. You know, like, oh, cool. Yeah, they were the first. Neat. But I never bothered with any of the movies. Like, sure, I'm happy they exist. And yeah, eventually I'll get around to seeing this movie, I guess. I'm not terribly
excited. What's happening right now? It's very good. So here's the deal. I like the Ultimates run of Fantastic Four. I read that one back in the day. I thought they did a pretty good job with the characters there. I've seen, I can't say that. I've seen a Fantastic Four movie. That original casting with Chris Evans as Human Torch and the guy from the Sherlock show Elementary as, oh, it wasn't Elementary. It was the one other one. Elementary is Johnny Lee Miller, right? Am I crazy? Yeah. He played the guy in that other detective show where the guy has like loses his memory or something. I don't know. The point I'm trying to make is he's very, very good. And Judd Hirsch is in that show. And I mean, if Judd Hirsch is in your show, that's a good show. So just go ahead and say it there. What was the name of that? Anyway, and Michael Chiklis's thing, come on, Jessica Alba. It's a good cast that they just botched terribly. Unfortunately, God rest his soul, the actor who played Dr. Doom was absolutely not the right choice for that role. He just didn't have the gravitas to make me interested. And
that?
Then the second, what's that? The guy from Nip Tuck?
Yeah.
Well, you said God rest his soul. I was like, oh, did somebody die? Was there something?
Yeah, the guy from Nip Tuck who played Dr. Doom died. Yes, he just,
we did?
That just happened. Yeah,
wow.
Like 2 weeks ago or something. Yeah.
Not aware. That's a bummer.
And the second one had Galactus as played by a cloud. So, you know, you're not really missing a lot. What's up?
Yeah. I said famously.
Famously played by a cloud.
I had someone who does not read comics ask me what was up with Galactus and why, if he was older than the universe, he looked like a human, like a human being from like South Bronx or something like that. And I was like, well, you know, there is a version where he's a cloud. And I was like, if he was from before the universe, that would make a lot more sense if he was a cloud. So I'm not going to.
He was a person, and he was the only being that was strong enough to survive the ending of the universe. So when the new universe was created on the other end of that, he was the beginning of that universe.
I'm sorry. There was no Galactus in the new universe. You got Starbrand, you got Nightmask, you got DP7, my personal favorite. You got Kickers Incorporated. There's no giant planet-eating dude.
So, Chan, what year did this cartoon come from?
78. We have this watched is the 1970s. From the 60s.
Yes, we have.
And when I tried to explain to Gina that there was another version, like, no, I'm pretty sure we saw all of them. No, don't you remember that there was one? And I remember that there was a version with a robot, a Herbie robot, that I had seen in my youth.
Yes.
It never stuck because it was terrible. And then I watched it just now. And my, I don't know, four-year-old self was right. He shouldn't have watched it. And he didn't.
I mean, that's the thing. At this moment, if I'm remembering the story correctly, the Human Torch was like licensed out to someone else. So they couldn't use the Human Torch in this Fantastic Four. They had to replace him. So what do you do? What do you do in this situation? As always, you make a goofy robot, voice him by Frank Welker, and call it a day.
I couldn't believe what I was watching. When Herbie first shows up and just starts fucking squawking, like, text Chan, I go, you gotta be kidding me. Like, this isn't real. Like,
yeah,
we're not doing this, right? You tell me we're not even getting, like, She-Hulk or something that would be, like, a reasonable stand-in? Or was that, that was even possible?
Here's what you need to know. Originally, this cartoon was supposed to be done by Hanna-Barbera, which would have been bad enough. But for some reason...
At least competently done.
Like there was a dust up at NBC and they swapped with Hanna-Barbera and they were supposed to do Godzilla. They ended up doing the Fantastic Four. This is the company that made the Pink Panther cartoons. There is nothing in their catalog that suggests they should be given
making this kind of cartoon.
Something like the Fantastic Four. I love the Pink Panther cartoon. 95% of that is the music.
Yes.
And almost none of it is the animation.
I've never seen such excited and impactful walking in a cartoon that I've seen.
See, I know enough about this stuff now after so much time that I saw every single loophole that they exploited, every single cheat that they did to avoid showing anything. Like, they didn't want to animate next to anything in this show. So there was a lot of talking about stuff I was seeing.
Or in some cases, just putting who appears to be a massive Reed Richards behind the thing. And then you realize it's like kind of like dissonance. You know, you're like, wait a minute. They forgot to flip the frame. And so we're seeing like this giant Reed Richards standing behind the thing, and then it switches shots and you go, what am I looking at again? it's a baffling cartoon, Chan. Thank you.
It is so fucking bad.
So we get the Fantastic Four. Look, we have Herbie, we don't have Human Torch. Why in the opening scene are the Fantastic Four, who own a fantastic car, among other rocketry, why are they flying commercial in economy, seemingly at one point in the middle of the airplane, and then when the camera turns, they're against a window. On a couch, apparently. They didn't even have individual seats on this plane. Was flying just different in the 70s?
I don't know.
I think this has to be some kind of effort by the American, you know, airline lobby to try and say that, you know, it's transportation, like, out of the future. Even the Fantastic Four love commercial air flight. You know, they love paying for an extra bag. You know, Herbie can actually fit in an overhead compartment. So they're already saving on a ticket unless the thing needs to stretch out.
Look, putting the thing in the middle seat, I think, was a weird choice, is all I'm trying to say.
No, that's just Reed hazing him. I feel...
Okay, fair.
So, like, here's the thing. When you have Herbie in this plot, by the way, which is wild, I love that there's just no other thought. Like, what replaces Johnny Storm's dynamic on the team? I know, a fey robot. And it's a wild choice to then just have like this dictatorial, like, boo, I gotta figure this thing out. Just clap-trapping through this nonsense. And thing is like, God, Herbie, you're my best friend.
No, Fantastic Four was created in the early, early 60s. Once you get to Vietnam, all of a sudden, maybe a setting himself on fire who's a hero is not the choice you want to go with. Certainly not in America. So
you're saying that Johnny Storm went to a monastery to protest?
Just taking a hard right away from any issues we might have.
It is crazy that they're presenting, I'm like, Fantastic Four, Human Torch is inarguably the coolest member of the Fantastic Four. I don't think anybody can disagree with that point, right? So to take him off the team and replace him with Herbie the Robot, who essentially is just a double for Reed Richards' intellect with no physical skills whatsoever, and then to call him an equal on the team is absurd. It is absolute bat guano insane that this is the direction they took. They could have just taken even if you put Herbie on the team, that's fine, but put someone else in there to have that place on the team. You could still call it Fantastic Four or Fantastic Four and, you know, like you said, She-Hulk. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity here that we just chose not to do.
My quick theory, really quick, Chan, is just saying that this has to be just a troll on Johnny Storm. This is just Reed trying to just troll Johnny Storm, be like, wow, Herbie, wow, you really are the best member of the Fantastic Four. Certainly there was no other fourth member like you, Herbie. Herbie's the best. Like, he's just acting like nothing's different just to troll Johnny. That's right. My headcanon.
Our audience is, the audience for this cartoon is like 7-8-year-olds. You're trying to pretend like we don't today take big, awesome characters and shrink them down to little child-sized versions. How many goddamn Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends versions are there? Like an Iron Man out now. There's an Avengers one. They're all little children. This is a little child robot, and it is the fucking worst, but it is also very much in keeping with the history of animation for children.
100%, and I'll even add here that I just found out, because I looked it up, Herbie was invented for this cartoon. Herbie did not appear in the comics until after, because he was introduced here as the replacement for the Human Torch.
Yeah.
Which I've said it before, what are we doing?
So in pro wrestling, there's this concept of sometimes you push a guy too soon, meaning you're trying to get this one wrestler over way too fast, and then it just crashes and burns. I mean, you couldn't put a character like Herbie in a bigger death spot.
Are you calling Herbie the Rocky Maivia of the Marvel universe?
No, Rocky actually had talent. I would say he's closer to like the Bill Watts's kid. Oh my god. Or Greg Gagne. Oh my god, I couldn't have had a worse nepotistic choice. One of the members of the bloodline, I'm sure. I don't know.
Oh no.
How about this one?
All the Samoans are top notch. How dare you?
All the Samoans are great. That's first true. Up, foremost. That's true. I love all of them. How about Reed Flair? Can we go with that direction?
Just sadness.
So yeah. Look, we're only about 2 seconds in.
Call Ray.
Yeah, that's really a rough one.
Thank you. I
a lot of death in pro wrestling in general, so you know, we gotta be careful.
I mean, look, if you're talking about pro wrestlers from at least 5 years ago, there is a very legitimate chance they're no longer with us. It's a natural part of the conversation, Chan.
Well, weirdly,
it's regrettable.
The wrestlers stopped dying once they stopped like doping them up with insane amounts of cocaine and steroids.
Please, Chan, tell that to IRS's kid.
To bring it back to the Fantastic Four, which wrestler...
Did you just call out Bray Wyatt? Who died of, like, what did he die? It's like natural causes. What was it? Damn it. Hold
being
on.
Being a wrestler. Being a wrestler is what killed him.
It was a little complication and of something.
He died of a heart attack in 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, normal. That doesn't happen to people that age typically, Chan. So did Macho Man Randy Savage.
Unfortunately, you're probably doing a bunch of other things to your body in conjunction with the wrestling. Well, I mean,
the lifestyle leads to something else. I'm just saying. I'm not blaming anybody. Look, these things happen.
I mean, it's not like
they tend to happen more often in that world.
Not like he had a Rick Rude body and he was trying to keep up with that sort of lifestyle.
Kind of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Sorry for derailing. Yeah.
Sorry. I said something intentionally to make Chan mad, and then there was a delayed reaction and it worked. So that's just how this show operates. The point I'm trying to make.
The heart condition is a complication of COVID. No.
Wore a mask in the ring, even. That's the worst part.
Right now.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
He's a demolition demon in a beat-up Chevrolet. It ain't worth a dollar, so he wrecks it every day. Now here's Kenner's SSB smash-up derby set. And you can hoot and holler, cause you ain't seen nothing yet. Crash, bang, crack 'em up, put 'em back again. Crash, bang, smash 'em up, it's smash-up time, my friend. Kenner's SSP Smash Up Derby set comes with everything you see right here.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Point I'm trying to make is we're only about 5 seconds into this episode, and I want to push it further. Sam, hold that thought for a second, because we're on our way to go to Gateway University to get an honorary degree for Reed Richards. I assume Gateway University is when you go into a university and it leads to other bigger universities.
Wait.
Sorry, Sam. Go ahead. I got one plot point out. Take us back.
Wait, hold on. Wait, hold on. Ray, what episode cartoon did you watch?
I watched the one that was in the link you sent.
Did you watch The Final Victory of Doctor Doom?
No, that's not the one that's in the thing, Chan.
Boy, this is going to be, wow, how far are we into the episode before we realize that Ray watched the wrong episode?
I clicked the link, which immediately when it started, it was Calamity on the Campus, not the same Final Victory. I hit the play button, and that's the one that I got. So we have two different episodes. This is fantastic.
That's why
this
I
is
put the
so fantastic
episode titles into the link.
Chan, I click a link. This is why you go to YouTube, Chan, not this internet archive that you always insist upon.
I go there.
Sam,
YouTube.
Sam, which episode did you watch?
I watched The Final Victory of Doctor Doom.
Then probably I'm going to take a back seat because the one I watched was absolutely a wonderful choice for this show, but I have not seen whatever your guys are talking about. So I'm going to take the back seat on plot and let you guys go forward, because here's the deal. Let me just recap. Calamity on the Campus.
Yes, please.
Our heroes are flying coach to St. Louis. All right. Yeah. And then a green monster.
About an airplane.
That's on an airplane. Yeah.
I was like, is he talking about the spaceship in like the opening, the intro?
They're flying Ozark Airlines, I guarantee it.
So here's the brief synopsis. They're flying commercial to St. Louis to get a honorary degree for Reed Richards. Something big and green flying around outside rips off a wing of the airplane, and they have to save themselves. And then they're like, we have to solve this St. Louis mystery. They arrive at Gateway University, where they are immediately mobbed by students, and then they're trying to figure out what the green thing was. And you meet the dean. And you assume the dean is evil right away because he looks like a Scooby-Doo villain. He says, oh, I don't know what that is, but I have my suspicions. Let's go talk to Professor Gilbert. They go and talk to Professor, who is also a Scooby-Doo villain. And you're like, oh, this guy might be the evil one. Okay, cool. And then he shows his superpowered green android, the Dragon Man, that he is trying to create for reasons. And then you meet his assistant, George, who's yet a third Scooby-Doo villain. And he says, we're building an AI brain until we finish build. This is perfect for the time. Chan, this episode was great for us. He says, we're building an AI brain, but until we finish it, we have to control it with the helmet. At which point they're going to go to Reed's thing because the dragon has proven to be stronger than the thing. George, the assistant, says, can I sit up on stage on the dais with you guys for the big ceremony? And he's like, no, dude, you're my assistant. It's only like high level faculty of the Fantastic Four. And George turns and goes, then I'm not going. And then he uses the helmet to control the dragon to attack the Fantastic Four. They have to come up with an ingenious way of stopping it and then stop George. And it was real, real prescient to where we are as a people in the year 2025. I actually was going to congratulate Robert Clark Chan on picking such a prescient episode to talk about on Knowing Is Half the Podcast. Now, please, I'd like to hear you guys tell me more about whatever it is you watched.
Holy hell.
That's unbelievable. Ray, what a recap. Okay.
I don't trust your links. They take me to the wrong thing.
This episode, the final victory of Dr. Doom, because according to Wikipedia, the plot synopsis is Dr. Doom blackmails the United States into making him its leader, causing the Fantastic Four to spring into action. I was like, you know what? This feels like a commentary on Donald Trump. Let's see what happens.
Wow. Is every episode of Fantastic Four prescient?
This one absolutely was not. Not even in the slightest. We get, we start out with freaking Dr. Doom in Latveria, who tells his people to prepare the Royal Rocket, which is a goddamn rocket with a teeny little bubble in top. For him to climb into to fly it. I don't know if I'm gonna try it. Okay, you see me here, and you see where the microphone is. Imagine like this microphone goes all the way down to the floor, and this is the steering wheel. This is the steering wheel that he's got in this rocket. It looks like there's about like 18 inches square of space for Dr. Doom. They are drawing this, mind you. They don't have to like build a set for a guy to sit in and a rocket to fly. They're drawing this, yeah. And still, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
He looks massively uncomfortable in a rocket of his own design.
It's the Royal Rocket. They literally call it the Royal Rocket. The Royal.
If it's some sort of extension of his own bizarre fascination with not being seen through his metal armor, then having a really uncomfortable driver's seat for your Royal Rocket is just, you know, it's an aesthetic choice at that
point. You know what it looks like? It looks like if you watch those old, like, 1960s Ed Wood movies, how they had to just make do with whatever they had lying around. So they took a piece of, like, tubing and then just, like, stuck a rock on the top of it. That's what it looks like he's steering this red rocket. Now, to be fair, when you said we have to involve the Royal Rocket, I assumed it was just like the opening scene of Coming to America. But thankfully, that is not the direction that we're going in.
That is the thing you should be thinking of, yeah.
Okay, good, good.
Go ahead. You're on that episode now, right? You've pulled it up?
I pulled it up.
Share it. Share it, and I'll walk you through it. I'll give you some time code so we can share in this. You can learn as we did.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, hold on a sec here.
The final of Dr. Doom's
momentary of reacting along. The one thing I want to just underline to people, if they're not going to get a chance to see this in motion, you really should go out of your way to the Internet Archive and check this out, because it is the most budget-friendly animation you've ever seen in your life. And it's also just reminding me that, like, Stan Lee, I think they must have done this animation similar to the Marvel method of comics, where they were just like, here's what we're just animating. And then Stan was like, I still need to make sure that they understand that the rocket is flying and that the Invisible Woman is no longer there. You know, like,
I think they use the Marvel method of they use Stan's Marvel method for their animation, which is to say, the head animator walks in and goes, "All right, there's a robot and he's a real prick, okay? But then there's this smart guy and he's even more of a prick. Then there's a smart guy and some chick."
Ray is now looking at
all that, and then he walks out of the room.
Now, can you talk to me about the thing's animated lips? Because it is the most upsetting thing. I noticed it in the other episode that I watched as well. His whole body doesn't move, but his giant, let's just go ahead and say it, racistly depicted lips.
But here's the thing. I do not get racist from this. I get dog shit animation.
Okay, no, I'm not going to say they're trying to be racist towards Ben Grimm, but I'm saying that in other depictions of things in previous generations, that's how they would racistly depict other people.
If I was working as PR for Ben Grimm's team,
pause this.
I would want Ben to bury evidence that he had this rock formation at one point. And that's what it is. It's a formation. I don't get lips or like anything. It's just like, this is the thing hole. You know, this is his thing hole.
Look at this. This is, I don't want to.
It's so scary. Like Jack Kirby's thing was kind of like adorable in a weird way. But this guy's, I would not let this guy near my kids.
No, it's so bad. Here, stop this. Let's take a look. This is what, again, they don't have to make this. All someone has to do is use their imagination to draw something that is awe-inspiring. And maybe you don't have a lot of time and you're like, you know what? I'm going to draw an Easter egg with a Dr. Doom decal on it. And then maybe a little fin up top. And even with that bare bones description, you could come up with something less chintzy than this monstrosity right here.
I would question only that, like, they only had two colors to make Dr. Doom happen. A light green and it's a dark green, and that's all we get.
I don't know if you've seen Pink Panther cartoons, but basically there is a character up front and then just blank space behind him.
No, it is a hallucination. Yeah.
The way that this pod or the whatever this craft is drawn, I feel like this is closer to some sort of kink for Dr. Doom where they want to be, like, you know, suffocated in some way.
This
pressed up against the glass by, like, what seems to be an inflatable thing behind him. So I think this just, again, leans into their self-punishment, you know, their self-flagellation.
I get that.
Also, it looks like a penis.
Honestly, less of a penis than I would have thought. At this point, Sue is like, oh, look, a shooting star. Previously, the fucking robot has said, we have a report of a rocket taking off from Eastern Europe.
Right.
Which is where Dr. Doom is from. And Reed's like, I'll track it. Then Sue's like, oh, what a beautiful shooting star. Isn't that romantic? The Sue Storm in this cartoon is an affront to all womanhood. She is a throwback to a time that didn't even exist. Like, as submissive and cartoony as you might imagine a 50s housewife to be, Sue is like 10 times worse. And it is just, she's worse than Herbie. She's fucking worse than Herbie. I'll say it.
It sucks because she is the strongest one. I freeze frame here because lip animation is so bad. They had to conceal it with a newspaper with maybe the most absurd looking football player helmet I've ever seen my entire life.
I thought it was Ant-Man at first. And then I was like, what a weird Ant-Man. Oh God, no, that's just an empty helmet that someone tried to draw.
I feel the pain. I feel the pain of the artist though, because there's definitely moments where you think like, they're not going to actually focus on this. And then, like, they were like, do we have that newspaper? Oh, just, like, kick it up a little bit because the flaps suck. Oh, great. And the guy's like, no, don't, please don't. But I just want to, again, underline the idea that the beginning of this episode is the Fantastic Four sitting around and Dr. Doom getting in a rocket. That's all that happens. Like, this is the slowest 22 minutes of animation I've ever encountered in my life.
We are about almost 4 minutes into the episode at this point, as I'm sort of just like playing it in the background here.
Yeah.
And nothing, literally, that's all that's happened. They've sat around. Dr. Doom has gotten in a rocket. He's getting out of a rocket.
Hold on. I just want to make clear, pause it for a sec. This, you think like, well, maybe they just took Stan Lee's story, then someone just like dashed off some garbage and this is why it's so bad. It said story by Stan.
Teleplay
by same man. He cranked out this garbage.
We have to hold Stan accountable. I mean, the man's a legend, but you know, you got to stand on this too.
He is.
This is a rough chapter, man.
He's a legend in the way that Hulk Hogan is a legend, minus the sex tape, probably. I think.
But Stan Lee going like, that's not going to work for B brother to like Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko.
That's not going to work for me, true believer.
Yeah.
Doom decides, he says he can't walk. Okay, yeah. Back, go to, let's
he
see.
He lands in a park just to get a rocket pack and then rocket the rest of the way.
And he rockets to the Latverian embassy, a place he could have just landed in the first place.
He owns it. He doesn't want a goddamn walk, okay?
He does say that, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't want to walk, so he's going to get out his jet-powered flying harness and then fly to the embassy instead of, as you say, just fucking landing there. He surprises everybody in the embassy. Why? He could have just told them they were coming, because they're literally like, hey, nobody can come into the Latverian embassy. And he's like, you fool, it is I, Dr. Doom. Why didn't you just tell them? It makes no sense. Except that they had animation of a jetpack and needed to shoehorn it in somehow.
Does Dr. Doom have metal teeth?
Yes.
Or are they just grayed out? What is happening with his face?
I mean, you can go ahead and watch the animation of him talking. It won't answer any of your questions.
Yeah.
They had no clue about Dr. Doom's mouth, where they were like, Is he a mechanical fish man? Should he talk like that? Or you know, is this sort of a deformed face of some sort? Yeah, they don't. I agree, Chan. They don't really make up their mind at any point.
Go to 340 and put on the auto so we can hear. That's fine. Yeah, just
340. Oh, 440. Okay.
And just so we can hear the voice, like I don't want to crap on the voice actor, because you know, I mean, it's a guy who, you know, went
good
to
job, man.
Theater school, and you know, like probably does Shakespeare all the time. But like,
he's done other stuff. I recognize this guy.
He's got like 300 IMDb credits.
Dude, he's like a lifer. Yeah,
but this.
Well, let's hear a little bit of what he sounds like.
Now I shall contact the accursed Fantastic Four in a manner that will bring terror to their hearts. For they must be made to realize that they are helpless before the power of Dr. Doom. All is ready, Highness. Then leave me. No man may witness what I am about to do.
All right, what's that? Hold on, what's that? What's that hand
domestic,
gesture?
Isn't it?
What's that hand gesture?
Hand up. Make a fist. Uh-huh. Wiggle it around.
Yeah.
I feel like Snoop Dogg did that as a dance in the 90s.
If you just turn it around and make a fist, and then like that, fine. I'll buy that. You do not put your fingers out, close them, and wiggle your hand. That is not a thing.
It's a thing that I'm doing it. That's a new thing, and I'm bringing it back. I'm bringing the Dr. Doom back. You know what? I got to tell people at the studio that they got to work this into
into the next
new movies.
So, fuck, dude. This plot sucks. I'm getting mad just watching it.
It gets worse.
So they're hanging out in a living room, you know, somewhere in the Fantastic Four Tower, and it's just like a projector image of Dr. Doom. Like, this whole setup that took like a minute and a half was just him sitting in like a projector seat just so he could taunt the Fantastic Four. Like,
it confuses the shit out of things. Like, what? He's not here? How is that possible?
And it's Stan Lee going, now I have to make sure the viewers don't think that Doom is material. Rather, he is immaterial and therefore not in the room.
I'm freeze framing it where Dr. Doom is talking. His mouth just sort of flaps open and closed and his mouth, and it his upper jaw part just becomes teeth. And then not teeth,
yep.
And his whole mouth is like a void to nowhere,
yep.
And it disappears into his cape.
Yeah,
and it's like, it's a lot of fun.
It looks like late era Frank Miller.
Oh God, if they did the second Dark Knight Returns sequel in this style, I would watch.
I also saw that Jack Kirby was credited with like some level of storyboard, I think.
Yeah, he got the storyboard credit in there.
So I was like, probably just because the animators were like, we're just going to look at his panels and draw those, you know, it's like.
I feel like Kirby's lawyers called up and showed the exact panels that they ripped off. And like, all right, fine. Will a story credit do? Cool. Let's move on. Yeah, and if you want to...
Thing looks like a Cyclops right here. This is a very Cyclops-looking thing on the profile.
His arm seems elongated to me. It looks like he's acquired Reed Richards' powers, and honestly, if it was a little bit lower, it would look like something else.
Indeed.
These look like good, strong arms, don't they?
That's what they look like to me. Good, strong arms. That's what I'm talking about.
Please go to 643. I want to hear the thing say what we're all thinking and realize that Stan fucking Lee wrote this about himself.
Okay, here we go.
I wonder who writes that cornball dialogue, Count Dracula?
You did it, man. That's you. You can't put this on somebody else. Your fucking name is all over it.
That's very funny to me that Stan Lee would write something he knows. Come on. He's got to know deep down what hokum all this is.
Shades of the English dub of Samurai Pizza Cats, honestly, you know? Breaking the fourth wall.
Right, yeah.
Screwball comedy.
If this were meta in 1978, so much respect for it. It is not. I do not think that Stan Lee was self-aware a moment in his life. He lived the gimmick. And
also, can I ask a question? Is Sue Storm a foot taller than the Thing in this picture?
It goes nuts. The perspective is all over the place in this cartoon.
I think they constantly misplace like the frames of the characters because this happens with Reed very famously soon.
Yeah.
Like I'm no professional graphic artist.
Keep it rolling.
This is not how you frame a shot. They had to make Herbie fly just to get him in the picture somewhere.
Yeah.
Lord.
I don't know. When we started rewatching Deep Space Nine a little while ago and or was it Voyager? It was one of the two where I just could not understand why the actors were so close together.
Wow. This room is fucking huge.
Right next to each other. And yeah, you have the entire huge ass bridge. They're just right next to each other. And obviously it's because they have them in the screen. And like, but when you start noticing it, just like your fucking lips are touching. Why are you that close?
First off, phenomenal, and that's a good pickup. Second, to what Sam said, we're about to do a running sequence here, and I want to point out the bureau and the wonderful picture on the wall behind. This is the largest this building is roughly the length of the airport from that one Fast and Furious movie, that one landing strip. That was literally longer than Europe if you took the physics into account. Let's see how many times the bureau and the picture pass. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times do we pass the same thing on the back of the wall. It's the largest room known to mankind.
Oh,
this is actually the trailer to Fantastic Four versus the Backrooms.
Here's the point where they're like, oh, we have to stop Doom. Let's go. And they run outside and they're like, oh my God. No, that's like.
This shit blew my mind. They all go on to separate little LARPs. Like, they're just accosting people in the street.
This is the part where Sue grabs, it looks like an arms deal. There's like a guy selling another guy a laser gun in a back alley.
They both look like they're dressed up cruising for each other.
I was going to say, these are the lost two members of the Village People, both representing a government G-men.
Yes.
Yeah. There were suits. We got a great mustache. They're both wearing fedoras and they're just holding some alien pistol in the alley next to the hotel where the Fantastic Four are staying. These people have not been criminals for very long.
Hit play. See what happens.
And they're even worse gay criminals, to your point.
Now, they're to be fair, Sam, they're just criminals that happen to be gay.
That's exactly right.
It turns out this is a toy gun that one man was selling to the other for his toy company.
That's what
they were doing in
the way you do that in an alley.
I just think it's embarrassing that they gave that bit to Sue Storm, who was fooled by a child's toy.
That's not the stupidest thing she does in this episode either. Herbie hears something. Okay, go ahead and pause. Herbie hears something which he's sure is chicanery. Is Dr. Doom up to something? Go ahead and turn on the sound and let's find out what the thing is he heard.
So to set it up, Herbie has sent the Fantastic Four stroke-inducing bat signal into the air.
Yep.
Reed Richards has come over. They're on what appears to be at least the third floor of this building.
Mm-hmm.
And they're opening the window. Here we go.
I found some secret signals. This is Max Jones, Jimmy and the Jazzy, drama the straight, that tomorrow 9:40 on radio dial. KQ, Willis 9, 7 and 9, 5. Now stay tuned, we'll be right back after this word from Billy Johnson.
Secret signals, Herbie. It's just the finals of the world's fastest talking disc jockey contest.
If robots could blush, my face would be red.
Oh my God. What? Even? Why?
I'll be honest, Stanley's having a good time writing this. I take nothing back.
Also, I mean, if nothing else, John Machida must be rolling over in his grave to think that this is what is representative of his art and his craft.
What I love about this is we come on back, and what I assume happened is Sue Storm's like, oh, I got busted a guy with a toy. They're like, we found a DJ. The thing comes back, it's like, yeah, I got like three crack dealers. And like the thing was actually super competent, I assume. I'm not listening to this dialogue.
No. They don't say anything about it. What they say, go ahead and pause it. Reed is like, oh, we're running around like chickens with our heads cut off and we're accomplishing nothing. That's just what Doom wants. We need to relax. Let's go see a movie. He fucking says, let's go see a movie. And then Thing is like, fuck that. I'm going to go bowling. And Reed is like, oh, wait, I forgot. I have to go to the science convention in an hour. I can't go see a movie. And guess what Sue does? Sue, go ahead and guess. Right?
Apparently she's going to bang Fidel Castro here. What is happening?
Is going to get her hair done. Is that a moderately suspicious bearded gentleman who is running the elevators? Like
wearing an all green outfit?
Nothing suspicious about that at all. You know, please. Some of you guys have never been to New York, I can tell.
Yeah.
No, there's a classic New York move. Shake a guy's hand. They put a little sticker on the back of your hand that you will never notice. Okay, so I was saving some of my stuff coming up because the plot of this takes such a turn that I felt like it was written during a nightmare state.
Hold on.
That frame right there is fucking freaky already.
That is gross. Before this, the reason why they end up back in the elevator is because they're like, okay, we're gonna go relax in our own separate ways. They go outside and they're like, oh, we can't relax because we have all of these fans out here and we left our costumes on. We have to go back inside to change our costume. Go ahead and see what they've done after the elevator. Of course, they changed their costumes, right?
Yes.
They changed their they just left with the same costumes they had on and that we only see them in for the entire rest of the cartoon.
Cool. Yeah. You guys, I just discovered that Dr. Doom has several The Thing blow-up sex dolls in his closet at the embassy, and I'm not happy about it. I take it all back. You chose the better episode, very clearly.
They never explain why these Doom balloons, he calls them, why they look vaguely but not quite like The Thing.
It's The Thing with a mustache. What are we talking about?
And also, like, how they're able to just sort of, like, vexingly hover next to their target in, like, such a non-threatening way. It's incredibly disturbing. Like, I was sort of, like, impressed for a moment. I was like, Stanley really wanted to come up with something really bizarre and unsettling and, like, a mysterious balloon. It's like a plot out of, like, a Junji Ito horror comic. Like, oh, no, an inflatable balloon shaped like my friend The Thing is accosting me. Like,
how to get in the bowling alley.
It's like me. It's fit just for me.
They don't say that. The Thing doesn't. Oh my God, why would The Thing just immediately throw a ball at it? Like, there's people around.
That's
what we just saw. The Thing is bowling. Every time he throws the ball, he's breaking the pins. The giant Thing sex doll balloon is flying above him in the lanes.
And
he immediately turns and throws the bowling ball at it, which ricochets off of it, bounces back, and knocks him over.
The Thing.
The Thing.
Implying that the balloons have some sort of kinetic blowback ability that, like, anything that you try to inflict upon them, they can reverse.
They're 50% plastic, man.
My God.
And 50% hot sex doll.
A hot thing. I mean, it does lean into the Bara, you know, stereotypes.
So how do these
bears?
How does this help Dr. Doom take over the world? I guess I'm a little bit confused.
Invading the hair salon?
They do not explain it at this point. They do explain it a little bit later. It is way more underwhelming than possibly imagine.
Okay, Colonel Sanders, pause this. Colonel Sanders is definitely giving Reed Richards the award for the best secret spices ever used in chicken.
He found out the secret recipe, so he won a prize.
He found the 12th spice is what he did.
Oh,
you got
boy.
Mr. Richard, sir, you have unlocked another dimension of flavor.
They're giving him, quote, our scientific prize of the year, unquote. That is what Stan Lee came up with. That
so apparently he wins an award every episode from what I'm gathering.
I just wanted to say I have a dirty little secret is that Reed Richards is secretly starved for attention.
I don't think it's a secret.
I mean, the fact that he would accept an award where it's just Scientist of the Year, you know, it's not even connected to like an institution or some journal of record. You know, it's like It's like showing up for like the attendance prize, you know.
It is, again, I am quoting the science convention, and the thing that he wore wins.
Oh, God, I don't like, okay.
Prize of the year. The balloon shows up there, and they're like, oh, what is this? It's obviously his because it's around him. He is making a mockery of us with this balloon. Take away his prize.
Well, that's an obvious way that you would take that. I mean,
I also think that the way that Reed tried to pull the thing balloon down was really sexually aggressive. The way that his fingers kind of...
At first I thought it was like
him throwing
a giant baby in the air.
And then like the next frame is like the thing like clutching his arms tightly. And it just is like, it says something weird, man. My God, his uncomfortable. Why is he gone now?
Dr. Doom has now turned himself invisible with a Viewmaster and shown back up in the apartment, the gigantic apartment of the Fantastic Four.
Here's somewhere else to be visible elsewhere.
See, if he's visible in two places at once, we could never understand that. So he has to go invisible with the Viewmaster to show up as a hologram here with his weird metal teeth.
It's breaking me.
Well, wait a minute. It seems like he's got a very impassioned speech here. So, Sam, I think it's important. Let's take a listen. Listen in on Dr. Doom. He's obviously mad about something. His plan seems to be working. Let's see what he has to say.
I almost feel sorry for the Fantastic Four. What chance do they have against my own power and skill? They can't begin to imagine the real purpose of my amazing Doom balloons. And when they finally learn my secret, it will be too late to save them.
Is it? I don't know, man.
Do you want to know the secret?
The secret of the Doom balloons? I would love to know the secret.
They are tracking the Fantastic Four. They're getting their idols. They're scanning their molecular structure. So that they can be tracked, and so they can't sneak up on.
This is like those red dots he put on all their hands.
Yes, it's 100% the same thing.
But the stickers are gone now.
Yeah, but this is the next level of sticker. It's a sticker you can't take off, I guess.
Or see, despite the fact it's bright red on your hand.
Then Dr. Doom goes to the leaders of America and says,
"This is like so wild without audio. It's floating faces just yelling at each other."
Dr. Doom looks like he's a Valley Girl from a 90s movie right here.
It looks like he's fucking Butthead. Oh, like you can see the gum line. You can see the teeth. Yeah. Dr. Doom is Butthead.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So hold on. That's
correct.
Hey, Beavis.
Richards is a douche.
Yeah.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah. He threatens all of them to either give up their military to him or he will take over America. Something along those lines.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To what both of you said.
The thing that this battle has been riding on this entire time is the idea that, like, Doom is just sort of toying with the Fantastic Four. He hasn't, like, necessarily threatened anybody. He's just saying, I'm so smart, and if you can't figure me out, I guess I rule America. Like, you know, it's a really weird premise to me.
That's how
now he's doing something.
Yeah, barely. Because we're at, 15?
The vacuum cleaners, no. Not the vacuum cleaners.
You guys, why does this lady have a mono boob?
Huh.
If, Doom says, I want total command of your nation's armed forces. If you refuse, I will destroy your country.
This man is huge compared to the size of his living room.
They say no. 24 hours later, Doom shuts off all the electricity. That's
it. In like America or some region, right?
No, okay. In all of America, nobody has any electricity.
So all the pacemakers stop and he's murdered tens of thousands of people.
And pacemakers had not been invented yet, I just assume.
Damn.
Or any sort of medical equipment to keep people alive.
That feels like something that I should know for my...
I don't think they make cars or uniforms in this shade of light robin's egg blue anymore, and I think that's a shame.
I agree.
The two men are merely just a dreamlike extension of the car to make it blend in with the other vehicles.
100% true. That is a transformer, and those are projected holograms.
The dream of a car, just like Turbo Teen.
See, you guys, when you write as much as me, Stan Lee, you can think of these ideas. And you can take stories in wonderful places.
There's levels. There's levels you can't even comprehend.
It rhymes like poetry.
I like to have all my characters have the first and last letters of their first and last names be the same.
So, quick pause. Can I just say how many twists and turns the plot of this single episode has taken? Like, you could have named it Mystery of the Doom Balloons, but the Doom Balloons don't really factor back in until something so specific as to feel extremely minor that is, like, the big, like, obstacle to the episode, considering all the other crazy shit, like the outaging of electricity throughout North America, has happened. You know what I mean? Well, like, I feel like there's levels to this.
And it is basically a vamped up little red dot that he put on earlier. It's not even something new. It's just to keep them, it's just so he knows where
they
are.
It's like that item on Smash Brothers. It's like the item on Smash Brothers that, like, disables your shield, where you just can't, like, dodge or whatever. So it's like, oh, but like, it doesn't fucking matter if he knows where they are. They could still come up with some plan to defeat him, right?
Yeah,
it's,
you would think so,
and they do.
I'm so sorry, I should forget. Also point out, swear for the on this show, I've been using a lot of f-bombs.
No, it's fine. I don't know if we mentioned for the plot, Fidel Castro in the elevator was actually Dr. Doom in disguise. I don't know that we actually specifically called that out.
Shoot, dude.
But yeah, you guys, crazy. He takes his face off to reveal the Dr. Doom mask behind it. So they did it before G.I. Joe did. So I do have to give them credit for that.
Do we have to give them credit?
I will never get sick of the bit where you're wearing a human, like, face mask. You take it off to reveal you were wearing a helmet and face covering and or mask underneath it. Like, I don't know how any of that works, but I respect it.
Fair. I was going to say that Mission Impossible did it before them, but yeah, I don't. They did not have the face mask on underneath.
That's the key. Yeah.
My favorite part, which I hope they integrate into the, not to date this, but the Clayface feature film, is the idea that, like, the volume, you know, is there. Like, Clayface always, to me, only had the right amount needed to transform. So.
That's absolutely right. Now, I'm watching Herbie fly up to this spaceship of some kind. He's getting ready. He's rubbing his hands together to do some R2-D2 manipulation of this. Mm-hmm. And then if you watch this carefully, and again, I'm no guild animator, okay? I want to come at this by saying, I am just a guy on a podcast, but Herbie is rubbing his hands together to do his R2-D2, you know, you assume those arms are going to go in those little red holes,
little,
and we're
going to
get some good
action,
animation.
Yeah.
But what I noticed is that this happens instead. He just goes into the machine as if the machine's not there, as if we're having a clipping mistake in Fallout 4 or something.
Yep.
He no-clips the console. And we're back to running again. Now, we know that that apartment was the biggest apartment known to mankind. Let's go ahead and let's play the game again. I have not seen this particular scene, but I do want to say let's pick something in the background right away.
It is much shorter.
And then follow how many times we get to it.
Okay.
Does that seem fair?
Yeah.
So they're riding this version of the Fantasticar. Let's use the giant screen TV here. Or is it a window?
I want to say that I will give the background animators some credit in trying to at least busy the background with some level of stuff going on. Now, regardless of what sense it makes, it doesn't matter. But I at least want to applaud them for going, all right, technology, shit, what do we know? Microchip, CRT television, like maybe one thing that's green. Yeah, I don't know. Keep going, pal. Let's keep it going.
It's like a map. So here we go. We got the TV, and there we go. So one, two, three. Only three that time, but we might get back to more running. I have a feeling.
But so, once maybe this maybe lever not. Is pulled.
As soon as he pulls the lever, everybody's got to fall through the floor.
Now that's actually pretty cool. Look, I think that's actually pretty sick looking. Something for daddy.
So Reed Richards is falling down an elevator shaft with the rest of them. He wraps his arm around Sue Storm, but just enough for her to stick her butt directly at the camera and wiggle it around for longer than I'm comfortable with.
Manly, in my notes I said, make sure Susan's posterior is directly in front of the lens.
Gentlemen, if you think I did not make a gif of Sue Storm's badonkadonk, you are very much mistaken, and you may check your messages.
Get that on social media right now.
This podcast is looking respectfully. Oh my god.
So it
he takes away gravity.
Also, if you go just a few seconds more, to about 1960.
This isn't even the most ridiculous turn for this plot yet, but the idea that because Sue makes the panel invisible, Doom just gives up.
And he put his hand on it. He would have found it.
No, he could have found it.
She says that she's reaching in to destroy it. Or to break it.
With her shield.
Power has become to discorporate things. I don't know how she did that.
Okay, here's weird baby thing. This looks like a shot out of frickin' Smiling Friends. The kind of disparity between your expectation of what you think the thing's size is and what you think Reed Richards' size is.
And this is wild.
Because Thing is in front of him, it's not like perspective where like Reed Richards is close to the camera and Thing's far away. He's a tiny thing.
He's a Charlie McCarthy doll sitting on his lap doing bits while he drinks a glass of water.
Yeah, Reed looks like he has his stretchy hand up his arse.
Thing does not look happy about it, just for the record.
Thing is silent protest as Doom says, yes, make the thing say more embarrassing Catskill material.
Wait, are you here about my wife?
Yes, tell me again of your insipid wife.
Okay.
Go to Doom is pleased.
Because what happens here, go to 2012, and Doom is like, I got more weapons. You think you've stopped me just by right here? I will come at you and keep coming at you until you're utterly destroyed. And here, Reed has the solution.
Wait, anyone can fight with normal weapons, but I challenge you to a greater battle, the greatest battle of all.
What do you mean?
I challenge you to a battle of wits, a battle where the smartest one will win. And the other one loses forever.
I accept. Once and for all, I'll prove I'm your master in every way.
Okay, so sure, we can do like an Odysseus kind of thing we can do some sort of, you know, like, let's build the coolest whatever.
What are you talking about? These guys are about to play a game of Warhammer 40,000, and I am here for it.
I wanted to slide in and say, he said the greatest battle of all, and then Reed pulls out the Bible.
And okay. In my notes,
I tries to convert Dr. Doom.
I wrote in my notes, the greatest battle of all, love? I mean, why can't they?
Ray, I love your idea of Dr. Doom playing Warhammer. What a prick he would be to play against. What an insufferable rules lawyer. He would be a rules lawyer.
So apparently they brought with them on the Fantasticar that thing that you do with the optometrists where you put your chin on the thing and look in and to see the road while it takes pictures of your iris, but it's two-sided and they're both leaning into it, staring at it while it takes pictures of their cornea. Chan, what is happening here?
Go to 2035 and all will be explained.
Excellent. I'm very excited to find out what's happened.
Here you are, Reed. Here's your brain machine.
I put it carefully on the table, Ben. Now, this machine will measure our intelligence. We'll battle with our brains, and the smartest one will be the winner. Take a last look in the mirror, Doom. When the battle is ended, only the victor's face will remain.
Let the battle begin.
This is how we defeat Dr. Doom, is we take a little machine with some lights and some mirrors and say that this machine can tell who is the smartest. The machine picks Doom. He says, awesome, I am the best. Now that I know I'm the best, I no longer have to beat the rest of you. The rest of you Fantastic Four can go. All of America is safe. I don't need it anymore. I am going to go back to my embassy, tell them I am the smartest, and then go back to Latveria and have a big celebration because I am the smartest. That is the entirety of the climax of this cartoon. He has taken over the entire United States and gives it up because he thinks he's smarter.
So I assume that Reed Richards, since he brought the machine himself, has rigged it, knowing that Dr. Doom would be enough if he rigged it to say Dr. Doom won. And the fact that Dr. Doom trusts Reed's machine in the first place is already absurd.
It has shown nothing to suggest that it is measuring intelligence. It has lights and he's looking in a mirror.
And it pointed at their brains with some laser beam or something.
Did it?
It did for like a split second. Maybe we're about to get an answer here. Wait. Let me
hypothesize what I think it is really quick before we hear it from Reed's lips and say, this is something that Reed came up with to hypnotize dogs to obey people. And so if you put a dog on the other end of the mirror and then you look at the mirror, the way the light refracts off your two eyeballs, you'll be able to send like direct psychic messages to your pet. And so he just essentially hypnotized Dr. Doom with the pet machine to make him sort of like believe he is a good boy. He's a very good boy.
Interesting. Well, let's hear it.
Reed, there's something we don't understand.
Yes, I expected you to say that. He thinks I lost. He thinks he beat me. You see, my so-called brain machine was really a device to make him believe I was defeated. So the only way to be rid of him forever was to trick him into thinking he was the victor.
Kill me. So I was basically right.
End my life, Herbie. Please. Please, Herbie, do it for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Fantastic Four, 1978. Chan, I'm excited that today I watched two episodes of this.
Oh. I feel for you, Ray.
This is an abomination before the Lord.
The thing is, at least it didn't have the thing ring, which did its thing.
My God, if I could find a full episode of that, it would be the greatest day of my life.
I just really wonder at any point in the creative process, and I guess it wasn't because it was just all Stan Lee, who was like, oh my God, I forgot I had a deadline for my new Fantastic Four cartoon. You know, like, I feel like there's, okay, now tell me that this text message doesn't show up in the archive. It just popped up.
Sorry, that's from the chat from earlier. I just felt everybody should know when Sam said, I need someone to hold me tight next to the campfire. Sam.
That was said in context back at 8:30. And that was in privacy, I believe.
Not as private as this message was that I'll share. Hey.
You up?
But maybe the most damning message from before we started recording. Robert Clark Chan saying, test.
I can't see any.
Think about
text.
It. It's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Probably for the best.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, what are your final thoughts on Fantastic Four 1978 or otherwise?
So this is like a really preposterous cartoon episode because not only did like a lot of time happen between the beginning of the episode and the end, it is amazing how little of consequence occurs. Like, there is no... The Fantastic Four receive new moments of story 3 times in a living room. Like, that is the level of, like, drama at play. It was baffling in that way. I hate Herbie. I hate Herbie so much. I feel like this is such an odd choice for the replacement of Johnny Storm. And, I can kind of see the charm, ultimately, that MF Doom had to sample Dr. Doom's vocal performances and the different odd pacing of the lines in this cartoon, because Stan Lee describes everything that's happening visually. He wants to make sure no one is lost at any point. So I'll give this that.
I will say right now, I appreciate this cartoon, because not once did I ever feel lost as to what was going on. I wish more cartoons would give me a constant narration of every beat 3 times over. I would probably follow along better if we did so. Chan, what are your thoughts on Fantastic Four?
I hated it with every fiber of my being.
Well, there you go, Sam. I think that's going to about do us for today. Where can people at home find you on social media? How can they buy things from you? What projects would you like to plug?
Well, first of all, Ray and Chan, thank you both for having me on and having me a part of the show. But no thank you for this episode. This was really bad and awful, but I hope people check it out, if only to understand the horrors. And I think do the race special, do the 2-for-1. What I will plug is my socials, yeah, Sam Weller, YEAHWELLER. That's kind of my nerdy account. You can follow me for my art and my animations and my acting that I do. Also, my wife and I's marketing company, Scrappy Ads. We are a marketing company that is like a way to connect with your audience by making scrappy, funny videos that like regular ass businesses can afford. And we increase conversions through being funny and silly, and people can reach out to us at scrappyads.io for more on that. And we do excellent work. So we're happy to meet you and talk to you about what you need.
I love to hear it. Robert Clark Chan, you're involved in roughly 72 different podcasts. Is there anything you'd like to plug on the show today?
Nah.
All right. Confidence. Well, go ahead and also check out the Who Would Win Masters show. Why not? I'm debating people on that show, and we talk about it afterwards, and it's a good time. And if you like Fantastic Four characters, maybe someday we'll do one. In the meantime, may all of your Dooms be MF, and may all of your Herbies be non-existent. Good night, everybody.
Sue Richards into the Now You See Her, Now You Don't, Invisible Girl.
and Ben Grimm into a mighty muscled powerhouse called The Thing. Now, together with Herbie the Robot, the newest member of the group, they have become the greatest team of superheroes the world has ever known. The new Fantastic Four.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.